You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, what help is there for Afghans and Ukrainians looking to rebuild their lives in the United States? Welcome.us is at the center of the resettlement program. Jen White meets its CEO today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, scientists last summer published the most detailed biodiversity loss map ever created. The map shows parts of the United States where plant and animal species are at the highest risk of global extinction. But when you overlay that with a map of protected land, as the New York Times recently did, the two don't always match up. We're talking about the threat of losing animal and plant species and why the habitats of those species aren't always protected. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about biodiversity? Do you think more land needs to be protected one way or another for biodiversity? Are you involved in a project in your community or on your land, prairie restoration, for example, or other conservation efforts? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lisa Naughton is a professor in the geography department at UW-Madison. She studies biodiversity conservation in the tropics and has also studied wolf recovery in Wisconsin. Lisa, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Before we get into the specifics of conservation, could you just talk a little bit about the value of biodiversity? Why do we worry about the risks to plant and animal species?
Well, for one, it has deep value in the quality of our lives. I was speaking with a colleague who lives in the North Woods, grew up in the North Woods, never dreamed that he would hear a wolf, but now he hears them with his young sons and just says it's an incalculable joy to hear that. So we have the sort of intrinsic value, the moral value of sharing our beautiful planet with all forms of life. But more and more, we're learning from ecologist studies that more diverse ecosystems are better able to be resilient to change, better able to bounce back from drought, to bounce back from fire. So that biodiversity in our ecosystems is also helping keep our ecosystems functioning, our water clear, and enhancing in a direct way the livability of our environment.
Now, I mentioned comparing and contrasting those two maps. So where we look at, okay, here are places with threats to biodiversity. Here are the lands we're really doing a lot to protect. They don't always line up. How hard is it to line up special protections of regions of land with where the greatest need is?
That's such a good question. And indeed, all too often, protected areas, as valuable as they are, our protected areas were established in places that were perceived as having low agricultural value or low economic potential. So that left out some of our precious ecosystems like native grasslands, or given the timing of the establishment of many of our parks and reserves, it left out the southeastern part of the country, the lower Appalachias, places where there was no open public land to set aside. It was all under private property. So the challenge persists. Some of our most species-rich habitats are on private lands outside of parks and reserves.
Sometimes I think it can seem like an all or nothing. This land is completely protected, no human involvement here. This is private land developed. But of course, in reality, there's a lot of middle ground. Do you see a lot of potential to find sort of halfway measures where we can take that private land or that partially developed land and still keep biodiversity in mind?
Yeah, we have to. That's the challenge before us. Biodiversity demands that we manage our ecosystems at a landscape level. Protected areas are essential, but they're inadequate. We just can't set aside a big enough area that biodiversity will be guaranteed. So we have to work with private landowners. That inevitably involves some compromise, but it's urgent. I was just thinking of a happy story amid all the biodiversity sad stories. I think it's important to remember how in this very state, we have now eagles nesting in every county. The DNR and Madison Audubon just announced that. In fact, I heard it on NPR and looked it up. That is thanks to laws that were passed in 1972 against DDT. As a girl, and like many of your listeners, perhaps as children, you didn't see great blue herons or bald eagles, and now they've bounced back. I bring that up also because it shows that we need to keep our eye on biodiversity beyond protected areas. We need to keep our eye on agricultural land use and industrial land use that may have cascading effects for biodiversity. And with effort, we can push back. We can turn things around for some species.
Talking to Lisa Naughton, professor in the Geography Department at UW-Madison, about efforts to protect and preserve biodiversity in the United States and beyond. I want to go beyond now, Lisa. You've done work in the tropics where there is a lot of biodiversity. What kind of efforts, hopefully successful efforts, have you seen in your work to protect some of the most biodiverse parts of the planet?
Well, much of my work is in Latin America, and to a certain extent, the protected areas were established there in the 1970s and more recently, when biodiversity was a clearer goal. And so they are, many of them, better placed to save biodiversity in tropical Latin America, say. The challenge is...
I think we've lost Lisa there. We'll see if we can bring her back. We're talking about biodiversity efforts to protect it. Coming up, we're going to meet a Wisconsin effort that's trying to protect the whole watershed around Lake Superior. Lisa, do we have you back? We do not. We will pick up that part of the conversation coming up. And you could join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. Have you been involved in efforts maybe on your own land or in your community to preserve habitat for, well, what? Tell us what habitat you've been working to preserve, whether it's prairie or forest or wetland. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up our conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about at-risk species in our state and beyond, ways to protect biodiversity. We've got Lisa Naughton back with us from UW-Madison, and also joining us now, Bob Boucher, founder and president of the Superior Bioconservancy, an organization that seeks to protect Lake Superior and the Laurentian Forest Province in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. He's also the founder of Milwaukee Riverkeeper, an environmental advocacy organization for the Milwaukee, Menominee, and Kinnickinnick Rivers. Bob, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Bob, go ahead.
The Superior Bioconservancy is looking to really protect the biodiversity of this region. And if you think of it just in terms of what's biodiversity, what's important is that you are an organism, your body. So within your body, you have viruses and bacteria, millions of these and fungi that basically operate and keep your system running. So one of the most important features of keeping biodiversity is understanding the function of what things do and why it's important. So you wouldn't go into your car and take the carburetor and throw it away just because you didn't like the way it looked or way it smelled. So there's a health of the system is, and we have two keystone species that are very important for the functionality of this region in our North Woods. And those wetlands up there are some of the most biodiverse that we have. Those are our coral reefs or our tropical rainforests in terms of species richness, let's say per square meter. And so there's two species that have a significance in Wisconsin, beavers and wolves. And wolves help the forest significantly because they affect how deer browse. And before we had the landscape, so back to 1973, when the Endangered Species Act was enacted, there were probably about 200 wolves in northeast Minnesota. Now there's about 4,400 going across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Upper Peninsula. So the function that they provide is they basically frighten the deer and they change their behavior to more of a predator-prey relationship. And deer will remove up to 40% of the plant species if they're unregulated and they just keep growing. It's like having a herd of goats. So these other species like Canadian yew or white cedar, when they disappear, the forest itself becomes less robust, and there's because of its loss of species richness, because forests are a community of plants. If you have a pack of wolves, they are wide ranging. So you might have 75 miles for a pack of a pack range for, let's say, five wolves. So that's about 15 square miles per one wolf. And the forest, the function of it is they serve almost like an antibody, so that they change the behavior. So these areas where they frequent, you get this regeneration of all these species that get eliminated when you have too many deer.
And in just a minute, Bob, I want to ask about some of the specifics of the work of how you're working to preserve that. Lisa, we've got you back in now. What we're hearing from Bob there, is that an example of the kind of work we have to do in biodiversity in any particular ecosystem?
Yes, indeed. I couldn't agree more that we're not aiming at just collecting a certain species. We're trying to keep that web of life going and the interactions between those keystone species and the habitat.
And Bob, what you were just talking about, you're working on, you know, not just in one place, one forest, you're kind of working around almost the entire lakeshore and beyond of Lake Superior. Can you talk about just the scope of your effort to preserve the species and ecosystems you were just describing?
Right. So if you take the whole United States side, which is the national forests, county forests, and state forests of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, it's 21 million acres. And what we are mapping is connecting corridors to put linkages between these corridors to avoid fragmentation, to allow genetic exchange, and really to have evolution to continue. So no different than you need to be able to go to the bank, the hardware store, or the grocery store. Animals need to be able to migrate and populate and fluctuate across this landscape. And one of the key features that we're interested in seeing is introduction, so to speak, of allowing beavers to thrive across the landscape, because they affect the hydrology. So what beavers, it isn't just a critter, but when they build dams, this is a type of architecture that completely changes the hydrology of the rivers. So if we want healthy rivers, rivers that are less likely to flood, and each one of these ponds that they build also are one of the richest areas where we have for biodiversity, for great blue herons, ducks, and birds, because they become the engines of productivity. So we're looking across this landscape as sort of a regional planning for the ecology of the area, but also looking at its carbon aspect. So it's a high carbon landscape. And we hope to also continue up into the Canadian side, into Ontario. So the entire watershed of Lake Superior is protected, in essence. This is the most important freshwater body in this hemisphere, perhaps probably the most important and the purest in the world. So its volume of water and its future for the planet as a freshwater resource, and how those inputs, all those rivers and watersheds that drain into that, need to be in a type of status that they are functioning at high ecological value, because its essence, it's saving ourselves as well as saving our landscape here in the upper Midwest.
And Bob, I wanted to ask more about beavers in particular. For a long time, they were an economic resource for their fur. There are places in the country where they're seen as a nuisance by property owners because they change the hydrology. And you don't want that in your yard necessarily. How do you start to build a consensus in a community, whether it's along Lake Superior or maybe even in Milwaukee County, that, hey, they are neighbors we want?
It's an excellent question. It's really a coexistence. It's a coexistence issue. So you can control the levels of flooding that beavers, to avoid nuisance flooding, using flow devices. So this uses like a stack pipe, and you run a pipe through the dam, or you put a type of fencing around culverts or places that you don't want them to blocking. So you can work with them effectively in a co-management way. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has the worst beaver policy in the United States because they don't recognize this ecological value. It's important to keep them where you can control them. But for the Milwaukee River, for instance, I worked on a study with two university professors, and we showed by if we had beavers reinstated in the upper Milwaukee River watershed, for example, we would lower peak flood levels in downtown Milwaukee 37%. Now, that from an economic value, ecosystem service value, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, which has flood authority and paid for the study, for them, that's worth over $3 billion in flood relief. So where you could have beavers have an advantage for you is by mitigating flooding. So with climate change, we're getting instability in the system, and so we're getting big rains occasionally. We've had big flooding in pockets of area, and you can, in essence, re-strengthen your whole hydrology of all your rivers. In pre-settlement, our rivers were completely different. So it's a matter of thinking of this as how can we live with this animal and get the benefits and also the biodiversity, water quality, recharging aquifers benefit.
And Lisa, when we lost you earlier, you were talking about Central America in particular, and that what Bob was just talking about, building neighborhoods and partnerships between humans and the other animals and species. Have you seen success stories like that in your work in Central America?
Yes, definitely. I've seen success stories. It's I must say, though, it's challenging that enlisting local community members means expanding the different goals that the landscape is managed for, and there's often conflict. One of the places I work in South America, there's a gold rush underway. Very poor people, very biodiverse, carbon-heavy forest, but full of gold. And in such situations, the sort of shared management becomes very difficult.
We're talking to Lisa Naughton from UW-Madison and Bob Boucher, president and founder of the Superior Bio Conservancy, looking at wildlife habitat preservation, biodiversity preservation in Wisconsin and around the world. Let's bring on a caller now. Mary Kay is with us in Kenosha. Mary Kay, hi.
Hi. I'd like to see the DOT start planting trees in our native plants inland so we could leave our wetlands alone and, bring back the native bees and birds and things inland.
Mary Kay, thanks for the call. Bob, you're thinking about Lake Superior, but you're doing work well inland. Is that part of the story, native plants, trees, native bees?
Well, forests provide carbon, and what we're looking at is changing some of the policies on the national forest, the county forest, and state forest. Those trees provide a more stable environment for us by standing. You can still have forestry, but we need to allow a lot of it to go back to an old growth type of status. You get a whole structure there that allows certain species to thrive, like goshawks and martens, that we don't have, though they're both endangered in Wisconsin, because we don't have any old forests to speak of, that most people don't recognize that we had trees that were 400 or 500 years old. And to walk in those types of environments is a very unique and in many ways sort of a spiritual experience. It's a cathedral.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Michael in Wauwatosa. Michael, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to throw in my support for what your guest is speaking of. As far as the beavers, I've gone through hikes through Schwamigan and Nicolet, and I can see these old beaver dams that I just look back and I see what they created and the diversity. And now it's some of them are dried up, the pond that would have been back there. And I just wish that the DNR, that the state would allow a beaver sanctuaries in certain areas, like in the Schwamigan and Nicolet. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is I've got property in north central Wisconsin, and I'm big on planting native trees and especially oaks. And I have to wire up every tree at least 5 feet high, make a cage around it with woven steel, because if I don't, the deer will just strip the leaves off. And I think the deer have created an ecological disaster in a lot of areas. They've devastated the understory and anything that, consequently, that since there's no understory, the wildlife that would have depended on them is gone. And I'm just thrilled to have the wolves back in the area, and I'm a longtime deer hunter.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Bob, Michael, a lot of what he said lined up with what you were talking about earlier. It makes me think at a wider level, are there things that individual landowners or maybe businesses or communities that own land can do to help with the kind of work you're doing on around Lake Superior and elsewhere?
Well, yeah, by having beavers in the landscape, the current, for instance, management of beavers in Wisconsin is 5 months long, unlimited season. They don't keep track of who gets what. So it's an unregulated season. So if you had anything where you don't have any limits, you don't keep track of what you have, you don't know what you have. So it's a very poor management policy. Wolves provide the type of service that, they move the deer around, and your forests are really damaged significantly by deer. When you have wolves on it, your forest is healthier, and because it has this other diversity to it and as a community. So from a productivity standpoint, just from a public standpoint of getting more wood pulp and a healthier forest, more robust and more carbon, having wolves is probably the cheapest, easiest, healthiest thing we can do for ourselves.
And for people who want to do landscape restoration, things like that, Bob, are there ways they can work with your organization to be, part of the bigger picture?
Well, we can try to get support for understanding that to avoid fragmentation and vote for people who vote for the environment and for biodiversity and recognize that we need to have that. It's the system we live in. The earth is an organism. We live in it as an organism, and its health and our health are completely directly related. With the climate crisis, there's also a biodiversity crisis. The UN has agreed to that. We lack political will in a way. And so there needs to be voices like your caller there to address this issue and demand action because it's critical.
Bob, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Lisa, thanks for staying with us.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
I've been talking to Bob Boucher, founder and president of the Superior Bioconservancy. That's an organization that seeks to protect Lake Superior and the Laurentian Forest Province in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. Also with us, Lisa Naughton, professor in the Geography Department at UW-Madison. Both of them work on issues related to biodiversity in Wisconsin and beyond. Still time to share your story. If you work with a conservation effort in your community or elsewhere, let us know about it. Email ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us. You can always tweet us at Central Time WPR.